This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Spare a thought for Zimbabweans grappling with new currency rules. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. In 2009, the Zimbabwean dollar was abandoned after inflation reached an estimated 500 billion%. But now the government says all foreign currencies are banned. Only Zimbabwean currency is legal tender. The BBC's Shingai Nyoka in Harare explains what impact this is having.
This decision has caught the majority of Zimbabweans off guard. After all, the most Zimbabweans have US dollars in their wallet. It's the currency that they prefer to use because the RTGS dollar, the real-time gross settlement dollar, which was introduced in February, which is a quasi-local currency, has been losing value. It was trading at about 3 to the US dollar, and in the space of about 4 months, it's trading at about 11. So there's still a lot of confusion about what this means, but in no uncertain terms, Zimbabweans will no longer be able to walk into a supermarket and use US dollars. They'll have to exchange that money into the local currency.
Why do you think the government has done this now?
Essentially, what happened in 2009 is that Zimbabweans rejected the Zimbabwe dollar, which had been hit by inflation of over 50 billion%. And so they introduced the multi-currency system. But now what they're saying is that it's no longer a multi-currency system. Zimbabweans are preferring to use the US dollar, and that essentially it's expensive for companies to produce products using a currency that's as strong as the US dollar. And they want to go back to their own currency so they can develop the economy, they say.
Shingai Nyoka. Let's do the numbers. Middle East tensions and doubts over progress in U.S.-China trade talks are weighing on global markets. The FTSE 100 in London is down 0.2%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index closed down 1.1%. Now, as the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo arrives in India later today to pave the way for talks at the G20 this weekend, many ordinary Indians are grappling with a summer crisis that's become routine. Lack of water. Chennai, India's sixth biggest city, has almost run out. And across India, water is so scarce, it's often more expensive than petrol. The BBC's Zoe Thomas is there.
Most of the rivers and reservoirs that service the city are below 1% capacity, and that's left most people buying private water. You can call up the government to send a tanker, but take 15 days in some cases to get water from the government. You can call a private tank and they will be there within the day or within the next day. But the cost of private water has skyrocketed in the city.
And we got to remember, this is like in 100 degree plus temperature. Now, why is this happening? You mentioned no rain, but why isn't there a reserve?
For most of the country, there's this issue of the late monsoons. But in Chennai, they rely on the northeast monsoon, and that doesn't hit until October. The state of Tamil Nadu, where Chennai is located, they haven't done enough to prepare for this situation. They haven't done enough rainwater harvesting. So it's raining, but a lot of that water is being washed out to sea. The other problem is the government has allowed more and more developers to build on the banks of rivers that a lot of these citizens relied on for water, and that's made water access even harder.
Now, I remember 10 years ago, my uncle in Rajasthan in the desert saying, hey, don't worry, we'll just desalinate seawater. Are Indian authorities tackling this like a national crisis?
You know, they're not really. There is a lot of talk about this, but there's also been reports that the Indian government is burying some reports that say how massive a crisis this is. A report in 2016 said that if the Indian government didn't do anything, it wouldn't be able to meet half of its water requirements by 2030. Not nearly enough is being done to tackle how massive a problem this is.
Zoe Thomas. Protesters in Hong Kong will walk to 19 embassies tomorrow to press China on a controversial extradition law. China has already said it will not allow those discussions at the G20 summit. Conrad Wu runs a hailing app for vans and trucks in Hong Kong. He's been seeing losses up to $6,000 a day, but he still supports the protesters.
Well, we shut down our business back on the 12th after the government saying that they would not withdraw the bill. And I think the reason was to focus on something bigger, make our voice heard. We kind of resumed the businesses intermittently, but we still prioritize carrying all the goods, first aid stuff, waters, cooling pads, and that sort of things to Admiralty where the protesters are.
And you've seen losses of thousands of dollars a day because of that. How long can businesses like yours support the protesters?
As a citizen of Hong Kong, I would say it's something minuscule comparing to what we will be experiencing or facing when such a law passed, you know, which is affecting the entire community or even the foreign investors.
Now, since the handover of Hong Kong from Britain to China back in 1997, Hong Kong's share of the Chinese economy has fallen. It used to be a fifth. Today, it's less than 5%. Do you think that Hong Kong is still important enough to China economically to really listen to the protesters?
Hong Kong is a unique city where we've still enjoyed the status of so-called one country, two systems. So foreign investors will see us as not just another part of China, but also having our own law and order and economic systems and so forth. So what I believe is that, you know, we need to keep the uniqueness of Hong Kong in order to retain all these foreign investors and keep our uniqueness.
So how long do you think you will continue to prioritize, say, getting first aid kits to protesters over your regular customers?
Economically, you know, I'm actually losing money every day, but at the same time, I really want to do as much as I possibly can. So at this particular time, we are still doing whatever we can for the protest.
Conrad Wu in Hong Kong, weighing up his ideals and his bottom line. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.